Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Masechta Nida is daf Nanalef. We're back on the Mishnah. On the Mishnah, the very bottom of Mem Tesa Mud Beis, 49b. The Mishnah begins, Kol HaKashal HaAdon Kashal HaHaid V'yesh SheKashal HaHaid V'Einu Kashal HaAdon. Okay, so in the judicial process, so there are judges and there are witnesses. So the qualifications to be a judge is obviously not severe, but you have to. There are criteria in order to be a judge, and there are criteria in order to be witnesses as well. Anyone who could be a judge could be a witness, but there are people who can be a witness but can't be a judge. Okay, pretty self-evident, meaning that there's a higher criteria, there's a higher threshold in order to be a judge, which isn't necessarily true by witnesses. Okay, what's the Mishnah talking about? Meaning, who's the Mishnah talking about? So that's the Gemara's first question. Lasui Emai. So I'm Rav Yochanan. Lasui Suma Bachas Meinav. So someone who has lost sight in one of his eyes. Umani Rabbi Meir. He and our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, as we're going to about to see in just a moment, that if somebody cannot see in one eye, so he's half blind. I don't know how you want to call it. Okay, just blind in one eye. So Rabbi Meir is going to be of the opinion that he can't serve as a judge. He can serve as a witness, but he can't serve as a judge. So once again, our Mishnah is going to fit into that format that we've been discussing since the beginning of the sixth parak of Nida, where we have A and B. If you conform to A, you'll definitely conform to B, but if you conform to B, you may not necessarily conform to A. So according to Rabbi Meir, you have that in the judicial process. You can be a witness, but you can't be a judge. What would be those circumstances? That's talking about a guy who's blind in one eye. Now let's go through a little bit of Gemara. Ditanya Rabbi Meir Omer Matam Olamer Al Piyam Yekol Rivachol Nega. Based on their pronouncement on their verdicts, so we're going to settle all quarrels and all saras. Now Vechima Inyan Rivachol Etzal Nega. Now, obviously, the Torah puts together two concepts which really don't belong together. So nega and rivim, meaning saras and all types of judicial law. So make his rivim negam, negam yom dechsiv of yom eraos ba'af rivim yom. So the Torah is obviously trying to show us something through this hekesh, and so here are some of the things that we're going to learn comparing the two to one another. When it comes to saras, the Torah is very clear. You have to see it during the day, meaning you cannot see saras during the night. So bayom dechsiv bayom eras ba'af rivim bayom. So too, whenever you judge and you open up the judicial process, it has to be during the day; cannot be at night. So just like nega cannot be seen by a blind person. Now this can't be talking about somebody who's blind in both eyes, because the Torah doesn't need to express itself. Meaning, if a person cannot see out of both of his eyes, it is self-evident without a pasuk in the Torah that he can't look at saras because, unfortunately, he cannot see. What the Torah means when it says that someone has to have full vision in order to see saras, it means he has to have binocular vision. He has to be able to see with both eyes. So just like a person has to see with both of his eyes in order to look at saras, so too, and by the way, just if I may, just a small tangent, when you can see with both of your eyes, you have better depth perception, meaning right. A binocular vision creates a better
three-dimensional
creates a better three-dimensional picture. And so, right, and you need to know, right, certain, you need to have depth perception to look at saras, which is raised, which is lowered, precisely. So just like by saras, you need to both eyes in order to see the saras properly, so too by judging a case, even though you're just a judge and you're just hearing testimony, but you need to see with both of your eyes. Umekish negayim l'rivim, and we're going to go the other way in the hekish as well. And ma rivim shalom bekrovim, af negayim shalom bekrovim, just like when it comes to judging a case, so you cannot serve as a judge if you're related to one of the litigants. So too by saras, you cannot look at saras of somebody who's related to you. So if somebody is related to the kohen, blood relative to the kohen, and the kohen can't look at saras, ima rivim b'shlosha af negayim b'shlosha. So now let's take the hekesh to its logical conclusion. Well, not logical, but to its hekesh conclusion, which is the following. We know that whenever you judge a case, so three create a three creates a beis din. A minimum beis din is made up of three. So af negayim b'shlosha. So if that's true, then saras, when you're looking at saras, you should need three kohanim to look at the tzaras. Vidinu. Memona b'shosha gufa lo kol shekein. And on top of it being a hekesh, it's also logical. Because if we're just talking about money, because every time you assemble three judges together, a panel of three judges together, it's about money. I mean, it could be about other things as well, but in this context, we're talking about money. So for money, you need three. Gufo, which is more chaviv, you like your body more than you like your money, right? Some people like their money a little bit more, but I mean, you're right, correct. And the Gemara acknowledges that some people do like their money more than their body. But for the rest of us who enjoy our body more than our money, so if for money you need three, so for your body, lo kol shekein, how much more are you going to need three? So tamalomer v'huva el aron ha-kohen. O el echad mi banav ha-kohenim. Halamata shafilo kohen echad roe es ha-negayim. So on this, we're not going to learn the hekesh, and on this, the Torah goes out of its way to say that for the sighting of Tzaras, you only need one Kohen to look at it, not three Kohanim.
Question, right? Did you say that if there was an expert who would only need
one? Yes, we did say that.
So you can say Kohen until an expert.
Correct. I read my mind. And the Gemara over here, like Hanna kind of says it without flinching, that you need three for... For a Beis Din, and you're right. The Gemara in Sanhedrin does say that a mumcha yechidi can judge. Okay, very good. It's very good. It's a good point. Okay, let's raise the following issue. Tosfos raises this issue. It's such an interesting issue. Okay, so what have we learned so far? We have our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says kol kashala don kashala hay, that anyone who can judge can be a witness, and v'yesha kashala hay, but there's somebody who cannot be a witness. Sorry, somebody who can be a witness but can't be a judge. Okay. You know what's notably absent from our Mishnah? Women. Now, can women serve as witnesses? Let's start the discussion there. And the answer is unequivocally no. Women cannot serve as witnesses. Women cannot testify. That's one of the things that we talk about again and again throughout Shas. So we know that women cannot testify. Can women serve as a judge?
Only on television.
So Devar was a judge. Mm-hmm. So in Sefer Shoftim, Perek Dalet, Perek Hay, so we find a judge, right? And her name was Devorah, and she's a woman. And so without, you don't have to get too philosophical over here. Just all you have to do is just read a little bit of Tanakh. That's how much I know. I know a little bit of Tanakh. So you just need to know a little bit of Tanakh, and you know that Devar was a judge. So what we have over here is a blatant violation of our rule in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that anyone who's qualified to be a witness is certainly qualified to be a judge, but anyone who can be a judge can't... Sorry, let me do the logic again. Anyone who can judge can testify, but not everyone who can testify can be a judge. Okay, good. Now that I said the Mishnah correctly, so now you think about women. Women is a blatant violation of that rule, because women can serve as a judge, i.e. Devora, but women can't serve as witnesses. So that becomes an issue. And Tosos acknowledges that this is an issue. And take a look at Tosos on the top of Nun Amud Aleph. And we're going to go through Tosos as he tries to resolve this very issue. V'im Tomar, top Tosos. V'arei isha dikshera ladun ki dikhsi b'dvora. V'hi shoftas Yisrael b'isahi. So we have regarding Devorah, the Torah says that she was a shofetah. Shofetah means she's a judge. So she's serving as a judge, and we know that they can't testify. And we know that women cannot serve as witnesses. He turns to the Gemara Shavuos, and the Gemara Shavuos tells us point blank that women cannot testify. So, how can it be that a woman can be a judge and a woman cannot testify, and it does seem to fly in the face of our Mishnah? This is the problem. So now Tosfos is going to offer three answers. So let's go over the three answers of Tosfos. Each one of them in of itself is interesting. We're going to go through it relatively quickly, but it's just such an interesting point, such a fundamental point. The Yesh Lomar. Tosfos says, answer number one, Da'achi kamer kol ish ha-kashala dun kashala ayin. So answer number one is that we're going to limit our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says kol hakasher. So what we're going to do with our Mishnah, instead of the Mishnah reading the Mishnah kol hakasher, it's kol ish hakasher. Now, Tosfos is not inserting a word into the Mishnah. He can't do that. But he's just simply going to reinterpret the Mishnah. The Mishnah itself is just limited to men. In the world of men, anyone who can judge serve as a witness, but not everyone who could be a witness can serve as a judge. But when it comes to women, women subscribe to a different rule, meaning women can't be witnesses, but women can be a judge. Okay, that's answer number one of Tosfos. Answer number two. Inami nehid nidonim have isha bechlal mekomakoma dayanim in isha bechlal. You could say no. But the truth of the matter is, women cannot judge. Udavara haisadana alpi hadibor, and that Devara was a judge. That was alpi hadibor. That was by divine consent. Perhaps what Tosfos means over here, I'm not 100% sure, is harasha, meaning it was a specific dispensation given to just Devara. She was a Nevi'ah, so she did have insight into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so therefore she judged based on her Rasha. I have to tell you, and it's not my point, many point this out, this second answer of Tosfos is very difficult. We know that a Navi, on occasion a Navi can abrogate Torah law, right? The best example of that is Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi offered a carbon outside the base of Mikdash. Okay, it's true that on temporary suspension, there can be a suspension of Torah law. But that's just temporary. It's a one-shot deal. For Devorah to be a judge her entire life, and to say that that's harasha, that is, you know, a temporary suspension, that's very difficult, but Tosfos does say it. So that's Tosfos' answer number two. Inami, third answer of Tosfos, La hasadana ela melamedes lahem adinim. And the third answer is that she wasn't an actual judge. She knew everything about the judicial process. She instructed what to be done. She was like a professor, so to say. But she wasn't an actual judge herself. Okay, that's possible answer number three. You notice the difference
between...
She's a mentor. So you notice the difference between answers one versus answers two and three. Answer number one really maintains that Devorah was a judge. And then in general, women can be a judge. Even though women are not witnesses, women can be a judge. That's answer number one. Answer number two and answer number three are basically no. Women cannot serve as judges. What about Devorah? Exception. Answer number two is that it's an exception. Answer number three is she wasn't an actual judge. She was just a mentor. Okay. So, right, there's a big difference in terms of how you want to address this. Answers number one versus answers number two and three. And there's a fourth possible answer, which Tosfos over here doesn't point out. But I saw the notes on the side, right? My little cheat notes over here. And the fourth possible answer is the following. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, right? You learned the third parak this past year. I learned the third parak this past year. So in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the third parak, what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to accept upon yourself a judge who may not normally be a judge. For example, Gimel Roy Bakker. Right, for example, if let's say you feel like your father would serve as a good arbiter of the case, a good judge of the case, so the two litigants, if they want, can say, look, obviously my father's related to me, but you know what, I think he'd be great over here. Do you accept? Because if you accept and I accept, we'll have our father as a judge. So you could be Bekabo. So over here, we could say that normally a woman cannot serve as a judge, but the Jewish people were Mekabo. They accepted Devorah as being a judge. Tosfos.
That's another Tosfos.
It's another Tosfos.
You want? See
on the side. Yeah. So, it's... Where's this Tosfos? The Alfi Vamdushin... Where did I find it? I saw it. I didn't make it up. I'm kind of national... No. But it's somewhere in the notes, because I saw the answer. Okay, maybe Tosfos and Baba Kama gives that answer. All right, look, you have a Tosfos and Baba Kama, you have a Tosfos and Shavuos, I definitely saw it.
So the first one, the first answer to this Tosfos, that there is an exception to this Mishnah.
Right, the first answer is really the most fundamental answer, in that our Mishnah is only talking about men, but our Mishnah is not talking about women. And women can, in fact, serve as a judge. Okay, that's the first answer. Really, it's the, you know, it makes... It takes Devorah and it turns it into a rule, not an exception.
Yeah, women judges in Israel now.
Yeah? On the court, yeah?
Yeah. But on the religious court. No, the religious court, though.
Okay. We go back to the Gemara. Where am I? Ha'usam Yahweh Nun Amud Aleph. We're about 10 lines from the top of the page. Ha'usam Yadav B'Shivusa De Rabbi Yochanan. So there was a blind person who served as a judge in the community of Rabbi Yochanan. Now again, we're going to say, like we said up until now, he's not blind in both eyes, he's blind in one eye. Dahava Kadayin Dina, and he was judging. Active judge. Lo Kamalev Lo Midi, and Rabbi Yochanan said nothing, which is obviously an approbation. And so the Gemara asked the obvious question, how can Rav Yochanan not say anything? How could he give a tacit approval of this judge's judging? He's blind in one eye. And Rav Yochanan always says, and I mean always, meaning it comes up again and again throughout Shas, that we follow Stam Mishnah. When Rav Yehuda Hanasi writes a Mishnah and writes it anonymously, even if we figure out on our own, meaning the Gemara, even if we figure out on our own that Mishnah really is only the view of one person, but if Rav Yehuda Hanasi wrote it as an anonymous Mishnah, that's the accepted halacha. And our Mishnah says that some people can be witnesses but can't be judges. And who's that talking about? It's somebody. It's a Summa Be'achad Me'enav. And by the way, that's Rav Yochanan who said it. So Rav Yochanan is explaining our Stam Mishnah. So why would Rav Yochanan now not remove this judge from the bench? Okay. So Rav Yochanan Stam Achrin Ashkechan. So the Gemara's answer is like this. There's another Stam Mishnah. Meaning you can't look at a Mishnah in a vacuum. You have to look at all the Mishnahs throughout Shas. And there's another Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Didnan, Dine Mamanos, Danin Bayom, Vigomer Balaila. Now the Mishnah over there says that when it comes to monetary law, you start it during the day, but you could finish it at night. And so what? what is that? How is that Mishnah contradicting anything that we said over here? So Rashi explains. It took me a while to figure this out. And then I looked at Rashi, and then it all became clear. So Rashi says, obviously the author of this Mishnah doesn't hold by that Hekesh. Remember, the whole point of Rav Meir is that there's a Hekesh between Saras and Rivim. That whatever's true by Saras is going to be true by the judicial process. And one of the things we said, Saras can only be seen during the day. And judging can only be judged during the day. And this Mishnah says that judging can be finished at night. So whoever's authoring this Mishnah just simply does not accept the Hekesh. So this Mishnah also would allow someone who's blind in one eye. Okay. It's a little bit of a jump, but that's what we're doing. That's how we're jumping.
This Stam Mishnah is Rav Meir,
and that Stam Mishnah, whoever it is, isn't Rav Meir, but
there's another Stam Mishnah, and it's obviously not
Rav Meir. Good. So good. So now you have competing Stam Mishnahs. So now, why did Rav Yochanan say that one's better than this one? Who's to judge? So Ibai say Mestama Derabim Madif. So the Gemara says, okay, well, I'll tell you why. Because our Stam Mishnah, now that we know, is Rav Meir. That Stam Mishnah in Sanhedrin is the Chachamim. So, okay, so that makes someone better. Or you can argue like this. Look, our Stam Mishnah is Masechta Nida. The whole Mishnah over here is coming as a tangent. Okay, as all these Mishnahs are coming as a tangent to the first Mishnah of the sixth Perek. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that's not a tangent. That's where the laws of Sanhedrin are actually taught. So I would rather go to the prime location of Sanhedrin to teach me about the laws of Sanhedrin as opposed to the Mishnah in Nida, which comes by way of tangent. Okay. Okay. Again, we're going to go the ABBA. Some rights say if it's true by A, it's true by B, but if it's true by B, it's not necessarily true by A. Okay, so we're going to that same format, and now we're going to be talking in terms of food. Anything which is obligated in Masros is Metamei Tumas Ochlin, meaning it's a food, subject to food tuma. Now, food tuma just simply means like this, that if I have a food which is edible by humans, it's subject to becoming Tamei. Now, there's a lot of qualifications over there. It needs Hechsher, it needs to come into contact with a liquid, then it needs to come into contact with tuma. source of tuma could be that it can even come into contact with a rishon l'tuma, it will become tame. But the point is, not to get too lost in the world, in the rules of tuma and tahara, although today we will get lost in it, hopefully not. But right now, just know that if something is chayv and masros, it's metame tuma sochlin. Meaning that if there is a tithing requirement, so therefore it's a food, by definition, it's going to be a food. But there are things which are subject to tuma sochel, which aren't going to be obligated in masros. Now the Gemara over here, it's one line of Gemara, lasuya mai, lasuya basar v'dagum uveitzim. Your proteins are going to be meat, fish, and eggs. Now meat, fish, and eggs, aside from all being proteins, what are they? They are things that do not grow out of the ground. They are things that we make a shahakal over. They're obviously no obligation.
What about meat?
Meat's here. Right, so they're obviously not. There's no miser obligation. Are they subject to tumas ochlim? Sure, of course they are. Meaning, any food that's consumable by a human is subject to tumas ochlim. Is it obligated on maser? No, of course not, because it's not something that grows out of the ground.
What about fruit that was not washed yet?
Right, but that's just a detail okay. In terms of we're looking at types of food. We're not looking at the details in terms of how they become. We're just looking right now at the category of which foods are going to be metame tuma sochlin. So the answer is all foods. Which foods are subject to miser? That's only the foods that grow out of the ground. It's just another way of saying that for miser, you need something to grow out of the ground. Okay, now, good. Next Mishnah. Now, when it comes to peah has a higher criteria, has a higher threshold in terms of what's required in the mitzvah of peah. The mitzvah of peah, I'm sure we all know, is that when you're a farmer in your field, you got to leave off a corner of your land for the poor person. The mitzvah of peah. We know Mishnayos about peah. We certainly know the first Mishnah of peah, all of us. Because right after we say Berachas HaTorah in the morning, So we say over now the first Mishnah of Peah. Eilu Dvarim Shein Lahem Shiur. These are things that do not have a Shiur HaPeah. Peah, there's no Shiur of Peah Min HaTorah, which means that when you have your field, if my desk could be viewed as a field, so how much do I have to give over to the Ani? So Min HaTorah, I could just mark off the smallest indentation of the field, and that would serve as Peah. As you would expect, the Chachamim stepped in, and the Chachamim said, You got to do more than that. So the Chachamim gave a shear. I don't remember offhand what the shear actually is. That's wonderful. So, but the even though right min haTorah there's no shear, right. But min derabbanan there's a shear. Right, we have that by truma as well. Min haTruma for truma there is no shear, but the Chachamim established a shear of 1/50th, 1/60th, 1/40th. Okay,
but Tam
haTorah
there's no shear.
There's no shear by Tam haTorah.
Learn as much as you want.
Right. The more the better. So the Mishnah says kol shechay bepeah chay b'masos v'yesh chay b'masos meiner chay bepeah. Now, if you're chay bepeah, you're for sure going to be chay b'maser. But if you're chay b'maser, you're not necessarily chay bepeah. So lasuya mai. So let's run right to the Gemara because the Gemara is going to really fill in the blank. What are we talking about? Lasuya teina v'yerek sheno chay bepeah. Figs and vegetables are not chay in the mitzvah of peah. Figs and vegetables. Does that make any sense? It will in just a moment. None. So we're going to learn together a Mishnah and Peah. First Perek. So we already know Mishnah Aleph, and now we're going to learn Mishnah Dalet. Right? We're in Mishnah Yisrael Peah. Klal Amur BePeah. So this is a general they said regarding the Mitzvah of Peah. Kol Shuhu. We're going to go over five criteria in terms of which produce is Chayiv in the Mitzvah of Peah. Kol Shuhu Ochel. First of all, it's got to be a food. It's got to be edible. Vinishmar, and it's guarded, it's protected. Vigidulo min ha'aretz, grows from the ground. Ulikitaso ke'echad, harvested in one shot. Umachniso likiyum, and can be held for long periods of time. Chayiv bepeah. So if you have those five criteria, it'll be chayiv in peah. Now, we're going to go through each one. Ochel lemutei svichi sitim v'kotze. So it's going to be edible, and that is going to exclude sitim and kotze. Do I know what I'm talking about? No. How about if we look at Rashi? Somewhat helpful. Rashi says krug. Doesn't mean I don't know what that means. Kotze, goitro. Okay.
It's a type of dye.
It says Rashi, the
previous Rashi.
A type of dye. Okay. Types of dye. Nishmar. Okay. In other words, again, these things are not edible. That's the basic point. Nishmar lamote hefker. Once something is dedicated to hefker, so then no longer is guarded protected. Once something is dedicated to hefker, so it is not chayev in peah. V'gidul aminarz lamote kameim apichios. Things that don't grow from the ground. What doesn't grow from the ground? Mushrooms. Mushrooms do not grow from the ground. Mushrooms grow pretty much anywhere. It's a fungus. V'lekitaso ke'echad. It's harvested together. Lamute te'ena. That excludes figs. Figs, again, by the way, the second time in the Masechta that you need to know things about figs. Last time you needed to know about figs was in the fifth parak. Right, you remember that we gave a mushal of a developing woman, and we compared it to a fig back on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and we said that if you understand the developing fig, you'll understand the development of woman. I think we should all study up on our fig development, and then it would help us understand women. Not promising, but correct. I am being recorded. Okay, so if you knew anything about fig harvesting, so you would know. Again, I've known nothing, but you would know that the figs are not harvested altogether. They develop at different times, and so therefore they don't conform to this criteria of peah. Peah, they all have to be harvested together. Umachniso lekiyum, and the fifth and final criteria is they have to be stored for a long time. Lemute yerk. Now vegetables, of course, right? We all know how vegetables behave. Even after the fridge, they're perishable. So they do not last, and so therefore they're not once they're detached, obviously, and so therefore they're not chayev in peah. Okay, v'ilugab b'maaser tanan kol shu ochel v'nishmar v'gidulam and aretz chayev b'maasros. Now, in terms of the threshold, the criteria for maaser, it is a much wider net. Maaser kol shu ochel v'nishmar v'gidulam and aretz. Three of the five. It has to be a food, it has to be guarded, and it has to grow from the ground, and that's it. And the likitaso ke'echad is gone, and the machniso lekiyum is gone, and the Gemara says it. I don't have to. The ilu likitaso ke'echad machniso lekiyum lo ketani. Okay, good. So what we see over here is that there's a higher threshold for peah than there is for maser. Interesting, Rashi. I'm going to point out over here. Rashi says this all the time throughout Shas. Rashi writes. Loketani. You see the Rashi of Loketani? It's like six lines from the bottom of Rashi. Rashi says, Almatena v'yer chayav ma'aser midrabanan. That vegetables and fig are obligated in ma'aser, and Rashi says they're obligated midrabanan. The midaraisa la mechayav el adagam v'tirosh v'yitzar. Rashi says that the mitzvah of ma'aser min ha-Torah only is grapes, olives, and wheat. Wheat or all grains. Not just wheat.
The Shema says it.
Correct. The Shema says it. The Pasuk in Korach says it. I mean, Rashi has good grounds to stand on in terms of why he differentiates between this and that. Now, mind you, by the way, that all the other produce that grows from the ground is chayv and maaser midrabanan. So practically speaking, it's all chayv in maaser, trumas and maaseros. But right, one's daraisa, one's the rabbanan. Who argues with Rashi? The Rambam. The Rambam argues with Rashi, and the Rambam says all produce is chayav in trumas and maaseros mid daraisa. Okay, you have a major debate between Rashi and the Rambam in terms of which produce min haTorah is chayav in trumas and maaseros. And Rashi over here says, Rashi says it all the time. Rashi is extraordinarily consistent on this point. He says that only grapes, olives, and grains are chayiv in Trumas and Maestros Min HaTorah. Okay. We continue in the Gemara with three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Let's go. Im hayu bahem shuman v'tzalim chayavin. Onions and garlic are chayiv in the mitzvah of Peah. Okay, onions and garlic. They're storable. That's exactly correct. Right, right. Onions stay forever. Yeah, garlic also. No. They both hang around forever. Everything And we quote the Mishnah over here. Now, I don't want to get too much into the details of the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here is arguing how, when you have rows which are varied, which are staggered, you have a row of onion followed by a row of things that are not chayv and peah, a row of onion followed by a row of things that are not chayv and peah. So how do you view those rows that are not obligated in peah? Are they mafsik? Do they break the rows of onions? And so therefore each row requires peah in of itself? Or no, can we look at all the rows in a totality? The rows of vegetables we could just simply ignore and it would be one peah for the whole field. That's a machlokus over there.
Why do you look at as a whole field, though? It's an entire field, and you're supposed to be corner of the field.
Again, I understand. The only reason why we just bring it up, we just want to show, the Gemara just wants to show us, that onions and garlic are chayiv in the mitzvah of peah. Okay. Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rav Yochanan Olson Shazar Mitchila Lebehema. Okay, now, I'm sorry. Before now, we run forward. We move forward. Okay, the Gemara is going to switch gears over here. And really, we won't understand until later, and I mean tomorrow, why the Gemara is doing this. Meaning the Gemara now is really going to change topics and move to what seemingly is a totally different topic, not related to our Peah versus Meister discussion, and it's only later where it's going to pay off in dividends in terms of why this discussion is coming up now. But here's what you need to know. We talked about in our Mishnah Tumas Ochlin. Food that's subject to becoming tameh. Sorry, that was wordy and not clear. And which foods is it? The answer is very simple. All foods. All foods which are edible are subject to tumah. Okay. However, and I made this point already, but now I'm going to emphasize, it has to be consumable by humans. If the food is only animal food, meaning designated for animals, that's not considered food in this world of Tumas Ochlin. It has to be food which is consumable by people. So now, I understand that grass, there's nothing much to talk about. Grass is always only going to be eaten by animals, so grass is never subject to Tumas Ochlin. And for the crazy person who eats grass, we can ignore him. Right, exactly. But there are foods, however, out there. The Gemara is going to turn to Olshin. Now Rashi says Olshin is it's a type of grass, a crespula. I don't know how to translate that to English, but it's a type of growth which we could eat. Right, it's kind of like alfalfa. Right, I know people who eat alfalfa. I'm not one of them. But in other words, there's types of growth that come out of ground, which is kind of ambiguous. So, what we're going to be discussing is how to clarify that ambiguity. And this is where we begin the discussion. So now let's start with the Gemara. I gave it a somewhat of a proper introduction. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana. We're in the last line of Nun Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Yochanan Olshin Shazar Mitchila Behema. They were planted for animals. So because they were now planted for animals, they are not food. They're growing out of the ground. They are simply not considered food. And the Gemara now quotes in the name of Rav Yochanan the following halacha. V'nimlach aleim la'adam. Now, as they're growing out of the ground, the person's thinking to himself, you know what? I want to eat it. Meaning, I'm making a change of plants. I planted it for animals so that animals can eat it. But you know what? I changed my mind. Tzricha, top of Nun Amud Beis. Tzricha machshava l'cheshe yitlishu. You need to articulate this. Not now, it's not going to help now. Only after they're plucked out of the ground. Only after you pluck them out of the ground is your machshava going to carry any type of weight and significance. But before you pluck them out of the ground, even if you say it, it's a health nisht. It's really not going to help you.
But I think that anything that's actually growing, you cannot do anything to unless it's back, no?
Okay, kasavar, essentially that's going to be the Gemara's point, machshava schibur loshma machshava. When you have a machshava about a food that is still connected to the ground, that's not going to be considered a machshava. Amar Rav Afa Nami Tanina, Rav said, I would like to support this with a Mishnah. Now we've seen this Mishnah before, and it is such a difficult Mishnah. Yugimel Dvarim Ne'emru B'Nivela Sof Tahor. 13 things that were said by Nivela Sof Tahor. Now, birds. Kosher birds, not kosher birds, kosher birds, we know they have a funny halacha when they die. When a kosher bird dies without a proper shechita, so it's a nevela, it's a carcass. But not like the carcass of an animal. Carcass of an animal, the moment it dies without a proper shechita, it's now an ava tumah, it's a source of tumah, gives off tumah. Tumah emanates from it. You touch it, you become tumah. Food touches it, it becomes tumah. Right? You get it. When it comes to a bird, a kosher bird, that dies without a proper shechita, it's a nevela. But the way you contract the tumah is a very odd way. Not touching it, not carrying it, but swallowing a kezias of it. Now, obviously, you're not allowed to eat it. It's not. It didn't receive a proper shechita. It's a nevela. So you really had no business eating it. But if you did, you're going to become tamei through eating a kezias of this bird. And so it is a very unique way of transmitting tumah from the bird to you. It's an exception to the rule. And the Mishnah tells us that there are 13 things that are said by Nivlas of Tahor. So it doesn't require Hechsher. We'll talk more about that later on this morning. But it's, right now, it requires Machshava. Meaning that this bird, if you want this bird to become Tamei with Tumas Ochlin, now, I don't get confused, because it's easy to get confused. When we say Tumas Ochlin, we mean, we're not talking about it as a source of Tumah. As a source of Tumah, we know how it transmits the Tumah, through eating. But look, it's a food. Now, it's not a kosher food. We're not allowed to eat it, but so what? It's still a food. We've spoken about this in the past. In order to be subject to Tumas Ochlin, it doesn't necessarily need to be a kosher food. It just simply needs to be a food. Non-Jews can eat it. It qualifies as a food. But in order for it to be considered food, tumas ochlin, you need a machshava. Now, when do you need a machshava? After it's dead. Meaning that if you had a machshava of this while it's alive, that's not a machshava. Now, this we're going to make a leap over here, a logical leap. And it's going to be a little bit of jump. And the Gemara
is... Before you make the leap, you have a dead bird.
Yeah.
If you eat it,
you're going to become tummy.
But
as a food,
eating it, then it becomes in the gather of any other nevela where
it becomes like
it at that point.
No, you're going to become no, tummy. No. I'm glad you made that point, because we're going to try to clarify this. Okay. When the bird now is dead and it's a nevela, and so right now it's nothing. It's a kosher bird, but it didn't receive a shechita. It's right now nothing. It's not even a food.
Right.
It's not even a food. When I then say to myself, you know what? I have a nice non-Jewish neighbor. You know what? I'm just going to give it to him. I'll let him eat it. Once I articulate that, now it becomes a food. And so what? It's not a food is not a source of tumah. It means that it could be a conduit of tumah. That if tumah touches it, it now becomes tameh. Whether it's whatever it is. Not as a source of tumah, as a derivative of tumah, as a conduit of tumah.
It can't be a conduit because it doesn't transmit itself, does it? It's a shein.
It will be whatever it comes. In other words, if it touches a sheretz, it's a rishon. If a nida were to touch it, it's a rishon.
It becomes food.
In other words, it's now it's
food.
It's food. It's food now, which means that it can become tummy. It's not a source of tumah.
Right.
And that's the confusing part of this whole discussion.
Before that, if it would touch a sheretz, it wouldn't think nothing happened.
Right, correct. Before the machshava, and it were to touch a sheretz, it's nothing. You have to say it. When we say machshava in this context, I'm assuming, I go back to my kachem mentality, but I assume that you have to say it. Now, tzricha machshava, vein tzricha heksha, ama machshava, and now we're going to make a leap. And the Gemara says, if a machshava for this bird, which is while it's alive, is not considered a machshava for things growing out of the ground while it's connected to the ground is not considered a machshava. Now, I'm going to try to explain this leap a little bit better. And basically, it's like this. When the bird is alive, it's totally not in the tumah discussion. A live bird cannot become tumah, cannot be a conduit of tumah, meaning there is no discussion of tumah to be had by an animal until the animal's dead. And therefore, machshava is totally inconsequential until the bird is dead. Now we're going to take that same idea and now move it to produce growing out of the ground. When something's grounded, right, it's like it's just like electricity. When something is grounded, that's it. It's not. There's no tumma discussion to be had by it. It can't become tumma. It's certainly not going to be a source of tumma. Meaning tumma is not an issue yet. Only after it's detached from the ground, now it's eligible to become tumma. And therefore, only then does machshava work regarding transforming it from a non-food to a food. Right? That's the leap of the Gemara about comparing birds, a machshava of birds while it's alive, just like produce that's still connected to the ground.
Is there such a thing as a suspended machshava, meaning that while it's connected to the ground, you have the intention, but it's suspended until it becomes detached, and then...
Right. It doesn't seem... From the Gemara's discussion, it sounds like it's totally meaningless. Like, that machshava just kind of, like, goes away. Now, the Gemara says, "O machshava Rabbi Zera Amar." So Rabbi Zera would like to argue. This proof was brought to us by Rava, and Rabbi Zera says, I'm not buying. The bird in question is talking about a bird that fell from the sky and it died. Meaning that the bird that the Mishnah is describing was never, and obviously it was alive, but when found by us, never was alive. This is Reb Zera's argument. Okay? It's a little bit of a dochek, I understand, but that's his argument. You know how it works, by the way. In other words, a mishnah can only be a proof if it's an absolute proof, and what Reb Zera is doing is he's just simply poking a hole at the proof. So Abaye says, what about the chicken in Yavne? You heard me correctly. What about the chicken in Yavne? So, and we don't know what the Gemara is talking about yet because we haven't been yet introduced to the chicken of Yavne. Momentarily, we're going to get an introduction. But in the meantime, let's just work with the Gemara. So what about the chicken in Yavne? Now, the chicken in Yavne is a domesticated animal. It's a bird. It obviously was owned by somebody. Somebody had it while it was alive, and then it died, and the requirement was it now needs a machshava after it died. But in other words, the person that had it while it was alive, why didn't he have a machshava back then? So Amalei Tarnagol Barahava. So he says, oh, that chicken in Yavne, that was a wild chicken. Achichu aleha. They made fun of such an answer. Tarnagol Barahav, Tamehu. What are you talking about? The wild chicken, you know that's not a kosher bird. And our entire discussion only deals with kosher birds, and you know that's not a kosher bird. Vav tameh mikametamya, and you know kosher birds don't give off tuma. Amalu Abaye. So Abaye says, please be careful. Gavraba Amramilsa. Somebody great says something. Lo sechich walaha. Don't ridicule. Don't make fun of him. Meaning, it's very possible that his answer is absolutely correct, and don't be so quick to mock somebody who's great. Betarnigola Shemarda. It could be that we're talking about a chicken, which is a kosher chicken, and the case could be, Omai bara di ivrai memara. And wild over here means that it rebelled. But the species of bird in question is a kosher species, and so therefore it could very well be a good defense of what we were suggesting. That it was a bird that rebelled, it was not owned by somebody, was not in somebody's possession, and it was only chanced upon us after it died, not before it died. And the Gemara will digress for just a moment, right? Tarnigolas Amarav Papa. Sorry.
I understand. Why becoming? What's the point here?
The point is just it's just a simple point that how did this bird come upon us? This bird of Yavne, the chicken of Yavne. What the Gemara now is arguing.
What difference does
there was a chicken if it
comes upon us?
Because the whole proof was based on the fact that you had the bird while it was alive. Machshava doesn't work then. A machshava is only after it died. And then the Gemara says, what about the chicken in Yavne, which the person owned while it was alive? And the Gemara, it's just a deflection of the proof. The Gemara is just simply saying, no, it's not true. He did not have the bird while it was alive. He only obtained the bird after it died. It's a chicken. Chickens are domesticated. The Gemara says, this was a rebellious chicken.
If you own it while it was alive, that would preclude your machshava from after its demise changing its status.
Right, right. Now, Rav Papa Amar Tanigolosa, this is now just a tangent. Tanigolosa da'agma have, Rav Papa, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Rav Papa Amar Taganosa de Agma Havai. This was the swamp chicken. Swamp chicken, which is a wild chicken, so to say, it's out in the wild, and yet it's a kosher species. Rav Papa Tami Damer Rav Papa Tanagol de Agma Asur Tanagolosa de Agma Sharye. The rooster, the swamp rooster, is prohibited, but the swamp hen is permitted. Now there's an extraordinarily interesting Rashi, and Rashi says that of this species of bird, the males are prohibited and the females are permitted. Okay, now if you would like to see the second Tosfos on this Amud, talks about this Rashi and really tries to defend this Rashi. It's a very difficult Rashi to defend. And if you take a look at Tosfos inside, because it can't be. I mean, before I reject. And before, I mean, Tosfos is going to end up rejecting. But in other words, it's a very hard position to take that you have a species of animal. The males are prohibited, the females are permitted. We have a general rule that anything that comes from something which is permitted is permitted. So,
right.
The Mishnah Bechoros. So it's very difficult. Take a look at Tosfos. He does try to defend Rashi. Ultimately, he gives up. It's a valiant effort. He gives up on defending Rashi. And the way he understands the Gemara is that they're just two different species. One happens to be called Tarnagol, and the other one's called Tarnagolta. But it's not male versus female. They're just two different species of birds. Visimancha, and the way to remember this, back to the Gemara, is Amoni velo Amonis. Okay, right? The Mishnah and Yevamos, that the male Ammonis they can convert. They can't marry amongst the Jewish people. Female Ammonis can marry into the Jewish people. Adarsh Maremar, and then we're still on this tangent, Tarnagalasa de Agma Asire. He said that the Tarnagalasa, the swamp hen is prohibited. Chazir Rabbanan de Darsav Achla, because ultimately they saw its behavior, and it behaved like a non-kosher bird. It tore away at its prey, and we know that's one of the simanim of a non-kosher bird. Vahainu girusa, and oh, by the way, says the Gemara, that it later was discovered that this is really the girusa species of the bird, which is a non-kosher species of bird. Okay. Anyway, we come back to our discussion. That was all by way of tangent. Tanu Rabbanan. Gozel shenafal legas. V'chishev ala la'aloso lekusi. Tame. I have a bird, and the bird falls into a vat of wine, okay, and drowns in the vat of wine, and we scoop the bird out of the wine. Now, it's interesting. We're not going to be really discussing the wine itself. Meaning, is the wine fine? I think, if I may offer my opinion, I think the wine is fine.
Was it kosher bird that fell in?
Yeah, it's going to be a kosher bird that fell in. It's a gozel. Gozel's a kosher bird.
Right.
So I think the wine is fine, but that's not really the Gemara's interest right now. So I'm offering an opinion, and could be right, could be wrong, but who cares? It's not really the issue. The issue, however, is the bird. And by the way, you think the consumer is going to want to know that a bird drowned in the wine? I don't think the consuming population would like to know that information. But, okay, be that as it may. The issue right now is the bird. The bird obviously died without a proper shechita. It drowned to death. And now, I say to myself, you know, obviously I'm not going to eat the bird. I'll give it to my non-Jewish neighbor. Tame. The bird now is a food. Subject to Tumas Ochlin. Lakelev. However, if I think to myself, oh, you know what? I'll give this bird to the dog. The bird is not a food. Because remember, in order to qualify as Tumas Ochlin, it has to be consumable by a human. If I'm thinking about how I'm going to give this bird over to a dog, it's not a food. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri Omer, afla kelef tame. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, look, I think that if you give it to the dog, it's still going to be tame. Now, interesting opinion, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. It's not the accepted halacha, but we will be spending an amud of Gemara from here until the middle of the next amud trying to understand better this position of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. How is it possible that he believes that even though this bird is going to be handed over to a dog, so it's animal food, not human food, how is it possible that he thinks that it's going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin? Please stay tuned. I don't know if this is not going to get you back tomorrow morning. I literally don't know what will. As the Gemara will spend an Amud trying to understand the thought process of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Rechanan, you may not catch your mark because Baruch Hu Zaku Sofi, Chachir, Bem Torah, Mitzvah, Shemar, Manech, Hafetz, and Mansiko, Yagdil Torah, Vyadir.